All right, what up, everybody?
What up, everybody?
Hey, I want to talk to you tonight out of John chapter 10. So if you have a Bible, you can just turn there. But maybe before I get there, can I ask you one really controversial question? Is it okay? Will you forgive me? Did it hurt when the Queen's best soccer team could only muster a draw against us in the World Cup? Did it hurt? Did you cry? Did you? Man. You've played Rashford, right? Why didn't he play more? Right? It was so strange. My sons were like freaking out. So my oldest wanted me to ask you, and I fulfilled that promise to him, so. Okay, I'll use that one. This one's like breaking up. Here we go. All right, I got a cord. All right, there we go. Woo! The last time I was here speaking with this group of people, I have this really distinct memory, and it's of Mark James laying in the floor and singing a prophetic song for 2 hours while the saxophone guy. Where's that guy? Is he here? Do you guys remember the song? Because I do. I've just been wondering, you know, Lord, would you hit us like that again? You know? Sometimes in worship, we're a little too serious. And we just need that river from the desert to come in, you know? Yeah. All right, here's what I want to do tonight. If you don't know me, I do a couple things in the States. I lead Vineyard Worship. That's like some of what I do. And then the other thing I do is I pastor a church. And for the longest time in my life, I've sort of had a foot in two different worlds. So I've always had one foot in the pastor world. And then I've always had one foot in the musician and songwriting and worship world. And for whatever reason, that's just the call that God has put on my life and the path that he set before me. And so I've always spent a lot of time with people like you while also doing stuff there locally in Campbellsville that's very pastory. And a lot of times when I come to speak to people like you, I'm talking very specifically to worship leaders about worship leader kinds of things. But if you would allow me tonight, what I would love to do is I would like to speak to you with my pastor hat on. Would that be okay? And it's not as though I'm letting go of my worship leader hat, but I just want to say, as a worship leader who is a musician and has written songs since I was a teenager, but who is also a pastor, I want to speak to you from that pastoral place. And here's what I want to talk to you about tonight out of John chapter 10. I want to talk to you about leading like Jesus. Leading like Jesus. And I just want to go ahead and jump right into the scripture tonight. I want to read to you a few verses from 10, really from verse 11 to like maybe 18. This is what Jesus says. This is really famous. If you've been in the church at all, you know this passage. Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for the sheep. A hired hand will run because they don't belong to him, and he isn't their shepherd. So the wolf attacks them, and he scatters the flock. The hired hand runs away because he's working only for the money and doesn't really care about the sheep." Jesus says again, "I'm the good shepherd. I know my own sheep, and they know me. Just as the Father knows me, I know the Father, so I sacrifice my life for the sheep. I've got other sheep too that are not in this sheepfold, and I've got to bring them also. They will listen to my voice, and there will be one flock with one shepherd." We'll just stop there for a moment. Like I said a moment ago, I want to talk to you about leading like Jesus. And I want to start there because if you're in this room on a Friday night when it's hot like this and you could be at the pub having a pint, Like, you could be doing lots of things on a Friday. You could be out with your best girl, you know? You could be doing any number of things on a Friday night, but instead, you came to a hot church on a Friday night. And here's what that tells me. That tells me your leaders. Maybe you're on staff at a church, or maybe you're not. Maybe you lead worship once a month at your vineyard, or maybe you lead every 6 weeks, or maybe you don't even lead worship at your vineyard church. Maybe you play bass once every 5 or 6 weeks, or maybe you're a background vocalist. But I want to tell you, if you're here tonight, there's some kind of a leadership call on your life. And so I want to speak to you as a pastor to leaders. I want to speak to you as a leader to other leaders. And here's why I want to do that. I want to talk to you about leading like Jesus, because until we grasp the model of Jesus' leadership, and until Jesus becomes the model of our leadership, unless we clearly see it in Jesus, until we can articulate it, not just say it with our mouth, but until we can articulate it in our actions and in the way we live, and unless he's the one thing we're really going after when we think about leadership, if we're not, I just want to tell you, like, we'll be formed by other models. Are you aware of that? You'll be formed by something else. And so I want to talk to you about leading like Jesus, because you're leaders, and we must be formed by a vision of Jesus's leadership in our life and as a model for the way that we lead others. And I want to tell you something about the way this world defines leadership. This world has leadership models. This world has definitions. This world has ways. It has techniques. Maybe you've been around some leadership stuff before, and maybe you've heard leadership talked about as influence. Anybody ever heard that? Leadership is influence. That's true. That is true. But it begs this other question. What kind of influence? Like, is it any good? Is the leadership influence any good? It's hard to lead people without influence. But how do you know if the influence we're trying to lead by is any good? I just want to tell the church something this evening. Just getting people to do something, that's not the metric. Just getting people to move, just getting people to sing, just getting people to come along a little bit, that's not the metric. Just getting someone to make a decision or to follow or to help, you know, that's fine enough to a certain extent, but that's not the metric. And here's why. Because the way the kingdom comes is the kingdom that comes. And if our leadership is rooted in narcissism, then it will be a narcissistic kingdom that comes. And if our leadership is rooted in manipulation, then in the end, no matter what happens along the way, it will be a manipulative, coercive kingdom that is nothing like the Lord himself. The way the kingdom comes is the kingdom that comes. And here's maybe why I've been thinking about this lately. I've been thinking about this because I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but for the last couple years in the church, a lot of leaders that we thought were good have turned out to be troublesome. And a lot of movements that we thought were the model, we're finding out we're not the model. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? A lot of things that we thought were success, maybe in retrospect, are not success. And a lot of the ways, and a lot of the muscle memory that we've learned over the years, maybe is a muscle memory we need to unlearn. We've had some bad examples, right? And so we need to be deeply formed by the methods and the ways and the heart of Jesus. And so that's what I want to talk to you about tonight. It seems like every week a new podcast comes out that's about church toxicity or abuse, doesn't it? Yeah, there's just this appetite for disaster right now, and it's just going to keep coming forward. And here's the thing. I don't think the bad stories are over, y'all. I think there's going to be more bad stories. And so what I want to do tonight as I'm speaking to this group is I want to pastorally inspire you to make Jesus the center and to make Jesus the model for any and every bit of leadership that he extends to you for the rest of your life. He's the goal. He's the model. And so I want to give you a little outline. Maybe you're outline people. I want to talk to you about the four things I see in this passage that have to do with Jesus's leadership. Number one has to do with goodness. So if you just want to write down goodness. Number two has to do with sacrifice. Oh, man, praise the Lord. What is that? That is so good. Number three has to do with proximity. Oh, yeah. Number four, more than money. Number one, goodness. Number two, sacrifice. Number three, proximity. And number four, more than money. I want to talk to you about number one, goodness. One of the things you notice in this passage, you already know this. It's one of the I am statements in the Gospel of John. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. He says, he's the good shepherd. This word, goodness, I just want you to know something about this word, goodness. When Jesus says that he's the good shepherd, it's more than moral goodness. Inside of this word good that Jesus uses here, it has this other attribute to it, and it has to do with beauty or attractiveness. Inside of Jesus' goodness is something that's beautiful. I want to talk to you just for a second maybe about beauty. A few things about beauty. Number one, beauty is attractive, isn't it? Anybody in here remember being like 13 and you just saw girls for the first time? You're like, wow, I didn't even care until today. This is amazing. They're all around me. You know? Number two, beauty is compelling. There's something about Jesus' goodness that is attractive. Number two, this thing about beauty, it's compelling. It initiates something inside of me. And then number three, beauty has this other component to it that can never be reduced to mere practicality. This is actually very important, and we'll get to that maybe in just a moment. How many of you understand that buildings don't have to be beautiful? It can just be four walls and a roof, right? But what is it inside of the human heart that makes us want to be beautiful, right? There's something about that we should maybe just stew upon. Notice that beauty has within it the core components of practicality, but it somehow supersedes it. Flowers are beautiful. Flowers are beautiful. Do you know why flowers are beautiful? Flowers are beautiful because they attract the other insects that go in and get the pollen. They take it to the other insect. So there's something about beauty that is attractive and compelling. It causes little bugs and stuff to move, or you and I to come close and take a look. And when we do, we spread that pollen around. There's something about it that's beautiful. There's something about it that's attractive. There's something about it that is compelling. But it supersedes the practicality. It's really a strange thing. So beauty can never be reduced simply to practicality. This is actually very important, especially for artists and musicians in the room. Think about this. It's not as though beauty and practicality are simply separate things. They're in fact deeply married. And in the case of Jesus, his goodness, it is moral. But his goodness supersedes morality in some way. His goodness is righteous. His goodness is actually good. His goodness has an aesthetic to it. And in a moment, maybe we'll talk about that. But Jesus's goodness is beautiful, and it actually attracts people to it. One of the things I love about Jesus is Jesus was a holy person, and rather than being repulsive, it attracted people to him. How many of you have ever noticed that a lot of times when Christians talk about holiness, it becomes very repulsive, doesn't it? You're like, I definitely don't want to hang out with that dude. It's like, that is not my guy. And yet Jesus was a holy person, and it attracted people to him, especially weak people and people who were on the outside and on the edges. It was something about it that drew them to him. In modern disastrous leadership, practicality and beauty oftentimes get removed from one another. I don't want us to think about this just for a second. If you have all practicality and no beauty, here's what you get. You get leaders who operate with the ends justify the means. That's what you get. Goodness becomes the ends justify the means. If it's just practicality all the time, if it's just spreadsheets, if it's just administration, it becomes the ends justify the means. Maybe it goes like this. Yeah, you know, Pastor, it's a bit messy. Yeah, there's a bit of narcissism there. There's a little bit of ego steering the boat. There's a morbid fixation on the budget. There's a morbid fixation on growth. But it doesn't matter because some people gave their lives to Jesus. Practicality divorced from beauty, the ends justify the means. That's what happens. But if you have all beauty without practicality, you end up with leaders without substance. This is the influencer model of social media. All beauty, but without something underneath it that's real, you just get leaders who lack substance. There's an overt aesthetic, but it's just the forms of worldly attraction. But the goodness of Jesus is that somehow he holds all of this together. He's genuinely good. He's righteous. He's holy. And yet there's something about him that is aesthetically beautiful and attractive and compelling. And he draws the people who need him most nearest to him. This is something for us to think about, leaders. And here's why Jesus' goodness is ultimately beautiful. It has to do with sacrifice. And it has to do with giving. The goodness of Jesus is rooted in sacrifice. He says he lays his life down for his sheep. Four times in this passage, Jesus says he's the good shepherd who lays his life down for his sheep. You want to be a leader in the church? You want to be a good leader? You want to lead like Jesus? You want your leadership to be beautiful? You want there to be something aesthetic and attractive and compelling about your leadership? Then it must have something to do with laying your life down for others. That's what it has to do. And ultimately, I want you to know something, church. This is why I trust Jesus. This is why I trust Jesus. Jesus is here in John chapter 10 riffing on shepherds and sheep. He says he's the good shepherd. And I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but anybody who was listening to Jesus when he first told this story, they knew all about shepherds and sheep. And here's the way it goes with shepherds and sheep. The shepherds keep the sheep for one purpose: to drink their milk, to harvest their wool, and on special occasions, to take the juicy ones and eat them. The sheep exist for the shepherd. And then Jesus turns this upside down and he says, not with me, not with me. I'm a different kind of shepherd. I exist for the sheep. I give my life for the sheep. In my care, no sheep will ever give his life for me. I give my life for my sheep. Can I tell you something, leaders? You want to be a good leader? You want to have something in your life that's like, really good, not just superficially aesthetically pleasing, but deeply compelling and attractive, and checks all the boxes of practicality at the same time. Become someone who lays their life down for the people God has called you to serve. Your sheep don't exist for you, you exist for your sheep. This is the model Jesus gave us, and this is ultimately why I trust Jesus. He's a different kind of guy. Today, good leadership or beautiful leadership at its core is willing to serve and nourish others. But all too often, leadership in the church is extractive. Can I tell you something? This is not just in the world, it happens in the church. You become a leader, you have some people who are serving underneath you, and really quietly it can happen. All of a sudden, you're beginning to extract life from them rather than give your life for them. This happens all the time. Too often in the church, it becomes extractive. It extracts people's money or extracts people's energy, and it happens for the sake of the leader. Or sometimes it becomes extractive towards something that's good, but in a way that damages people that are in your care. You know, sometimes we can say, hey, guys, let's do this thing over here that's really good, but we haven't thought carefully enough about the people we're asking, and all of a sudden, what we're really asking them to do might be damaging for their soul in some way, and it becomes extractive. Good leadership is not just about putting a goal in front of people, but it's about seeing people flourish as we tackle some of what God is calling us towards. Like, the thing we're always listening to is like, what is God calling us forward to? What is God saying to us for our church and the people who are in my care? But at the same time, we're also listening, because we're good shepherds. What is happening in this group of people that God has planted me with? What is happening in their life? And how can I give my life to them? I want to tell you a little story about my life. My spiritual father is a man named Ray Hollenbach. He's mostly unknown in the vineyard, but he's a giant in the vineyard. One of the things that I've learned over my years of doing leadership and being someone who pastors in the church, when I was younger, I used to be very impressed with who was on the stage and held the microphone. And as I've gotten older, I've learned to look for different things. And one of the things I look for as I get older is who has a disciple tree? Like, not who sings well or who preaches well, but who has actually raised up humans that are doing well and are living in their calling. Who has a track record, right? And so my spiritual father is a guy named Ray Hollenbach, who's largely unknown by anyone important in the vineyard, and Ray Hollenbach has a disciple tree that is unparalleled. Unparalleled. For 35 years, he's been raising up disciples. And can I tell you something about Ray's disciples? All of his disciples go and do great things. Like, it's crazy. I could just tell you story after story, the things that the men and women who have come up under Raymond do. It's really stunning. And when I was 29, I was a worship leader, just like you guys. I was just leading worship at my church. And Ray was just about 50, and he's a great pastor. And we had a great church, like literally, just a dream, right? Like, yeah, there's stuff that happens. Things get complicated. It's a church, but it's a dream church. And when I was 29 and Ray was in his early 50s, he comes to me and he says, Adam, I was about to leave one day, going out the back door. And he says, Adam, can I talk to you for a second? I said, yeah. And he said, Adam, I don't ever want to be Saul to you. I want to be Jonathan, because I think you're a David. And it split me in two. I was like, Ray, you've never been a Saul to me. He goes, yeah, okay. But here's what I think. I think I'm not supposed to pastor this church much longer. I think I'm supposed to turn it over to you. And I think this is supposed to happen when you're 30. We didn't tell anyone for a year. I knew, he knew, my wife knew, his wife knew, no one else knew. And then the next year, we told the elders and we told the church. And midway through my 30th year, I became the pastor of that church. And that was nearly 15 years ago. Ray gave up a great church. He was doing a great job. He had many, many fruitful years in front of him. People in the church love him. Like, he's the dearest man. No one dislikes Ray. Ray's the kind of guy, like, if you dislike him, it's not him, it's you. It's like, I just know that. You say something bad to me about Ray, I'm like, oh, it's you. Right? And he had a long run. I had no idea. And he just laid his life down for me. In the craziest thing, that I could be raised up and be given space, and that God could do the things that God was calling me to do. And many of these things are things that at the moment I was fairly unaware of. Does that make sense? And then let me tell you this. Then Ray stays on staff with me for 3 years. And he comes to me and he says, Adam, here's what I want to do. For 3 years, I'm going to tackle all the hardest things, and I want you to spend a lot of your time in your office praying and read the Bible. And I was like, what? He's like, don't worry about the budget. I'm going to take care of the budget. In complicated meetings, I'm going to take every single one that I can, and I just want you to live in your office to pray and to read and to study and to be formed in the heart. Can I tell you something? He laid his life down for me. I wasn't a sheep that he was extracting from. He was the good shepherd who was giving me his blood and marrow. And I'm here today. I'm here today because a better shepherd led me. That's why I'm here today. Yeah. The good shepherd lays down his life. He made space for me. So number one, Jesus is good. Number two, this goodness has something to do with sacrifice. Number next, good leadership, beautiful leadership, it has something to do with proximity. Proximity is all over this idea of shepherds and sheep. Because when you're a shepherd, you just live with the sheep. That's what you do. You're out there all the time. Like even when it's raining, you're out there, you know. On the sunny days, you're out there, and on the rainy days, you're out there. You're out there in the sun, you're out there in the night. You're just together. And Jesus says all kinds of stuff in John chapter 10 about himself and the sheep. He says, my sheep know me, and they won't follow someone else. This is Jesus' way of saying, I am close to my sheep. Not only that, but Jesus says, I know my sheep, and I know them by name. Like good leadership, it has something to do with nearness. It has something to do with nearness. It has something to do with proximity. It has something to do with closeness. It has something to do with not becoming a leader who is separated from the people that God has called you to serve. It's all very personal. See this in the life of Jesus and his disciples as well. Jesus calls Matthew. He's like, hey, how would you like to not do that tax collecting thing anymore? And how would you like to follow me? And Matthew gets up and starts following him around. He finds Peter and he finds James and he finds John. He calls them out of their occupations and they follow him around for 3 years. He finds these desperate men who are just hardworking blue-collar guys out on the edge of society. And Jesus, the Son of God, spends every single day with them for 3.5 years. God incarnate hung out with the same dudes every day. Has something to do with proximity. Like why was Peter an apostle? Like it even says this in the Gospel of Mark. It says that Jesus called his disciples to be with him. Come be with me. Like, why was Peter an apostle? Like, why was John the beloved disciple who laid his head on Jesus' chest? Because they were with each other all the time. Like, good leadership is sacrificial, it's giving, it's towards the other, but it also has something to do with proximity. It has something to do with nearness. It has something to do with sharing. It has something to do with mutuality. Good and beautiful leadership is proximate to the ones that God has given us. The world says that as you grow in influence and stature, you get removed from certain people. CEOs live in the corner office away from the hooligans. Those dudes down the mailroom, keep them away, right? Let me tell you something else about the world. I don't know if this is true in the UK, but it's certainly true in America. The richer you get, the better chances that there is that you live in a gated neighborhood. Lock the gate. Keep the riffraff out, right? As we increase in stature, as we increase in visibility, as we increase in anointing, as we increase in whatever good adjective you want to use here inside of the church, man, oftentimes in the world, there's the reflex to get further away from people, to live separate. And I just want to say to worship leaders, you can't pastor people. You can't pastor people via text. Not really. Like you can do some, but it's not happening via text. And you can't pastor your community via planning center. Like your call is not to see who blocked out the month of July. It extends beyond. It has something to do with proximity. It can't just be a bit of administration. Like at the end of your life, you don't want people to say at your funeral, they were great at planning meetings. Exquisite meeting planner. Like the best. Like, it was always so put together, you know? We always knew the songs on Tuesday that we needed to play for Sunday. It's great. I love that guy. Yeah, it has something to do with proximity. There has to be something more, and the more is nearness. Leading like Jesus means leading close to people. And in verses 3, 5, and 14, Jesus says he knows his sheep. And in verse 14, he says that his sheep know him. Let me tell you something else about leadership. Like good leadership, beautiful leadership, like proximate near leadership. It's not just that I know the people that God has given me to care for, but it's that they know me. Like one of the things the world will tell you about leadership is like, don't show your weakness. Be a tough guy. Never let them see you sweat. Let me tell you, the leadership of Jesus is, here are my wounds. Thomas, why don't you come put your hand in my side, Thomas? The leadership of Jesus is, could you guys stay up with me and pray because my heart is breaking? It is a Jesus who reveals his frailty. It's a Jesus who in his heart in that moment was like, man, I don't know if I want to do this. And Peter, James, and John knew that. And yet they couldn't hang with him. And he goes back. He's like, man, would you guys pray with me? I'm weak right now. Good and beautiful leadership, it's proximate, it's near. It is knowing the people that God has given you charge of, but it is also them knowing you. And especially your weakness, your frailty, the things you don't want to put on your highlight reel, the things that never make the Instagram stories, the things that never go on TikTok. That's the stuff. Because here's what happens when we expose ourselves a little bit and we become vulnerable with those who are around us. They become vulnerable as well. Vulnerability begets vulnerability. And can I tell you something? The culture you really want in your worship community is you want an honest culture. You want an honest culture. And the only way to get honesty is to get vulnerability. Vulnerability comes before honesty. Because without vulnerability, people will assume that you have it all together so that they have to have it all together. And so they'll lie. How do I know this? Because I've done it. I've lied about important things because I didn't know if there was going to be any space for care. I didn't know what was going to happen if I didn't measure up. And one of the most profound things you can do for your team is just to be honest about your very real weaknesses and go, you know what? Listen, y'all, like I've screwed up in my life. These are the areas where I struggle. These are the areas where God is training me. It is about proximity, and proximity is about knowing. It's not just sharing space. It's about knowing. You knowing them and them knowing you. You cannot administrate your way to beautiful goodness. Does this make sense? So Jesus's leadership is good. It's good because it's sacrificial, and it's good because it's proximate. All right, number next. More than the money. This is a word for us, you guys. Jesus says that the hired hand runs from danger and trouble because they're just there for the money. When the wolf comes, the hired hand runs away. He's like, man, I'm not going to do this for $13 an hour. I'm not fighting wolves for $13 an hour. So he runs, right? And I think it's so interesting when Jesus is giving us a little sermon on good leadership and what it means to be actually the real thing. I think it's very interesting that Jesus drops this little note about, you know, the wolf will come, but a hired hand just runs away, you know? And Jesus drops this little note about trouble, and he drops this note about money, and he drops this note about the difference between somebody who's got a calling and somebody who's just hired to do a job. Can I just say something to this group tonight? I just want to tell you, we're not called to be hired hands. The church doesn't need hired hands. The church needs sacrificial leaders who love and live near the sheep, That's what the church needs. That's what the church needs. The church doesn't need people who are extracting. The church needs people who are giving, but the church needs people who will not run away when the wolf comes. And let me just say a few things. Let me say a few things about this. Is there anything in the world that stresses us out more than money? Come on, be honest. The answer is no. Let me tell you something. Get married. Have some kids. You're going to think about it. And there will be a day, either sooner or later, where you will have to start trusting God in a brand new way. And there will be nights where you will eventually get to the point where you will say, God, you are going to have to carry my family or I will die from anxiety. It comes from all of us, right? Like, it's just a thing. It's just a thing. So I just want to say, look, is there anything that stresses us out more than money? No. And let me tell you, can I tell you something about rich people? They stress out about money too. It's universal. It's literally universal. Poor people stress out about money. Middle-income people stress out about money. And rich people stress out about money. It's universal. So I just want to tell you that so that we can just all agree. It's us. Jesus is talking to us. So number one, dude, it's real. Number two, if you're in ministry for the money, you picked poorly. You can stay this weekend. You're welcome here. But this gig ain't for you. Like, I want to tell you, like, it's just not going to work. And in fact, one of the things that we've learned in the last couple of years is, like, one of the things that gets people in trouble in the church when they're leaders is when they start going for the money, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's like, oh, there's something else there motivating me. It's the dollars, right? And by the way, here's what I think. I think the wolf Jesus is talking about is that. He's talking about, it's going to come steal the sheep, right? What is he talking? He's talking to us about scarcity. That's part of what he's talking to us about. And we're all going to deal with this. Especially as you get a little bit older. Everybody in here is going to be challenged on this very thing in your leadership and in your ministry. If you're a pastor here tonight, you're going to be challenged. If you haven't been yet, you're going to be challenged on this. If you're a worship leader, you're going to be challenged on this. If you haven't yet, get ready, it's coming. If you play bass once a month at your church, you're going to be challenged on this. Let me talk to you about my definition of leadership. One definition of leadership is this, higher level problem solving. Here's what I mean by that. If it could have been solved at a lower level, it would have been. And here's what that means. If you're a leader, the thing that's going to come to you most are the problems that didn't get solved at lower levels. I know that some of you are like, well, that's cynical. No, it's just true. It's just true. I say that without a shred of cynicism. It's just like, that's the way it works. So part of what's going to happen if you stay with Jesus and you're like, you know what, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to commit to the church. I'm going to commit to your people. I'm going to commit to a location. I'm going to live this thing out here in England and Ireland. I'm going to put my roots down. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to deal with problems a lot. And they're going to be the problems that no one else in your church could figure out. That's what's going to happen. And it's going to happen until you die. That's the wolf. You know, sometimes the wolf is like a really bad thing or a really bad agenda inside of a broken person that's operating in your church. And that's like, you know, we think of that, right? Like, we're like, when we hear this passage, we're like, oh, Jesus is talking like a bad person is going to come. Yeah, that happens, right? But mostly, here's what I think he's talking about. He's talking about those troubles that come and steal people, those troubles that come and weigh people down. And he's specifically talking about the things that accumulate over time and make you want to quit because you've said, this isn't worth it. What does it mean to be a hired hand? It means this mentality has come into your mind surrounding the ministry that he's given you. There are so many problems here, And this paycheck of mine is so small, it's not worth it. Has anybody ever thought that? My hand is up. Bro, I thought that a few days. Listen, here's how you know that you have to like start praying more. When you start daydreaming about moving. I'm doing that vulnerability thing with you right now, okay? Yeah, you're like, oh, Adam, you live in Kentucky, and you have a vineyard, and your family makes wine, and everything's great, and your kids are lovely, and blah, 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 blah. And I've seen your Instagram, and your sons are beautiful, and your daughter is awesome. I know you. No, let me tell you. Like, about every 9 months, I get this thought, and then I go to my wife, and I'm like, babe, what if we just sold everything, and we moved to Cabo, and I would make you margaritas and rub your feet, and no one would know us. Can I tell you what that conversation is? It's the wolf. It's the wolf. It's the wolf trying to get me to believe that it isn't worth it and that I'm just a hired hand. It's the wolf. And can I tell you something? It's coming for everybody in this room. And the wolf will make you a bad leader. If we're not aware of the wolf, if we can't see him, if we can't face him, oh my goodness, we have to get a vision for this. We have to get a vision that God's people are the sheep. I'm to give my life for them. But then there's wolves, and it's the troubles, it's the problems, it's the things that scare us, the things that we'd rather not deal with, and it's especially the thing that makes me think this isn't worth it. So what do you do in those moments? Because we want to be good leaders. We want to have leadership that's beautiful and attractive and compelling. What do you do? In those moments, you lean back into God and you say, God, would you speak to me about my calling again? I'll tell you another story. This is probably 4 years ago. And this is a story about how Jesus is the good shepherd in my life, okay? This is about 4 years ago. I was in hired hand land. My headspace was, dude, every day I would go home, I'd be like, Heather, we could just leave. Like, the planes leave from Louisville and they go to Mexico. And like, we've got a lot of equity in our house. Like, the kids, they don't need us that much. You know, like I had it all worked out, right? And I was feeling so beat up at church. I was feeling like such a failure. And I was just feeling like it wasn't worth it. And I was feeling really challenged. And this, I can't even go into it because it's too much of a long story, but I was feeling really challenged in the area of preaching. And it doesn't really make sense, but just trust me on that. I was feeling really challenged, right? And I came home one Sunday afternoon and I'm sitting on my back patio and I'm just thinking, oh man, I'm just fully daydreaming. I'm on Zillow. I'm just looking at property anywhere. I'm like on Airbnb. I'm like, we could buy that house. Like, we could just Airbnb it, and we could live in a van down by the river. Like, you know, I was just there, and I got a call. I got a call from a friend who's been my friend for 20 years. Her name's Hannah. Hannah called me, and she was like, "Hey, Adam, I got a word for you today." I said, "What is it, Hannah?" And she said, "The Lord wants you to know that you're his preacher." And I lost it. I'm like, what? I just lost it. I said, "Hannah, you have no idea what you're talking about right now." And she said this. She said, "The Lord wants you to know you're his preacher, even more than you're his pastor. You're his preacher." And she said, "I heard the Lord use the word orator," which is a very specific word for me. This goes back to when I was a sophomore in high school. Here's something about me. Before I was profoundly baptized in the Holy Spirit, I was afraid of public speaking. And when I was in middle school, eighth grade, I was supposed to get up and give a oral report, right? And I got up in front of the class and I started shaking. My hands started shaking. And I began to cry. And I just completely embarrassed myself, and it was super traumatic, right? Like, that's like an inner healing moment for me. Like, go back to the memory, look for Jesus, you know, like, we've done that a couple times. I got profoundly baptized in the Holy Spirit, like, just a little bit later, and that whole thing in Acts about boldness is real. Like, boldness came onto my life, fear left, like, done. Like, completely. Sophomore year, it's history class. The assignment is an oral report. I get up, I give the oral report, and my very secular history teacher says to me, she says, Adam Russell? I said, yes. She says, Adam Russell, you'll either be a politician or you're a preacher. Yeah. And when she said preacher, this thing landed on me. This thing landed on me, and it was like lightning, and I was very aware. In the moment, I was very aware something happened. It wasn't until years later I realized that my history professor prophesied to me in school. Right? Jump ahead, decades later, I'm not feeling called anymore. I feel like a hired hand. The wolf is there, and I'm thinking, dude, what am I doing? And my very good friend of 20 years calls me and says, God says you're his preacher. More than his pastor, you're his preacher. I'm fully back. I'm like, pfft. Here's why I'm telling you that story. Because this is another example of good leadership. Like, good leadership isn't just for leaders, it's for everybody. How many of you know that sometimes at church, you need somebody to lead you? Like, sometimes the word of the Lord is going to come through not your peer, but somebody that you're supposedly leading. Does this make sense? Can I tell you something crazier? Half the time, the most clear words that God gives me are coming from people I don't even like. I'm like, what? Why are you talking to me through that guy? Vulnerability. Yeah. Listen, guys, I'm on a journey. This is good leadership. Good leadership. It's beautiful. It's attractive. It lays its life down. It's sacrificial. It's proximate. It knows the people God has given you charge over, and it is also self-revealing. They know something about you, and it's more than the money. I just want to say this, especially to every young person in the room. It's more than the money. Stay with God. It is more than the money. Listen, I would rather have stories about miracles than dollars. Come on. You know, listen, there's something more. There's the chance that when we get together at church, God might do something. Oh, I'll tell you one more story. Because this is the stuff that's more than the money. There's a guy at my church named Robbie Gribbins. Are we recording this? Okay, we are. Okay. There's a guy at my church named something. And this guy is jacked. He's an absolute animal, okay? I just want you to think UFC fighter, but more. Like, he's scary. Like, when Robbie started coming to my church, I was like, I'm normally not afraid of people. That guy scares me a little bit. Maybe he's the wolf. I don't know. Like, that's what I was thinking. But Robbie and I have become friends. Strength coach for the local football team at the university. This guy's jacked. I mean, he's just, you know, ripped. And Robbie's been meeting God. Like, of all the people at my church in the last 2 years, God is doing more in Robbie's life than anyone I know. And Robbie just brings everybody. He's like brand new to faith, brand new to everything. The first day I met Robbie was just an insane story, but I'm going to tell you something else. And so for the last 2 years, he's just been bringing everybody he can to church. Like, just he drags the football players, he drags the running backs, he drags the wide receivers, all the wide receivers come. Like, they're all at my church, right? And Robbie's there every single Sunday, and one day I'm like, hey, Robbie, I want to buy you breakfast. He's like, man, let's go get donuts. And I'm like, really? You eat donuts? He's like, yeah, I eat donuts. I'm like, you don't look like it, but okay. So we go to this little Filipino donut place in my hometown called Best Donut. It has a smiley face. It's really cool. We go to Best Donut, and we sit down, and I'm like, Robbie, what's happening in your life? He's like, well, Pastor, here's what's happening in my life. He goes, you know, I served in Iraq and Afghanistan, right? I was like, yeah, I know that. And he said, Adam, I did a lot of bad things. I said, okay. He said, Adam, I did really bad things. I did the worst. And he goes, Adam, I've lived my whole life sure that I was going to hell forever. He goes, that's the reason I live like hell. He's like, you know, Adam, hell is not when you die. Hell's like next Thursday. I was like, okay. He goes, Adam, I've been doing that thing you've been telling us on Sunday mornings. He said, I've been reading the Bible. I'm like, okay. What have you been reading? He's like, man, I've been reading Acts. He's like, none of it made sense to me. He's like, I didn't even know what this is about. He's like, I don't know who these people are. And he goes, the other day I was reading, and I started reading about that guy whose name was Saul, but now his name is Paul. I'm like, yeah? He goes, yeah, I started reading about him, and then I studied about him, and I talked to this other guy who goes to church, and I was like, tell me about Saul. He says to this other guy at my church named Billy. He's like, Billy, tell me about Saul. Billy's kind of a tough guy, too. He's like, oh, yeah, Saul. Yeah, he was like a persecutor of the church, and he harassed and murdered the church. He was probably there when Stephen was stoned, but he becomes one of Jesus' best guys. And Robbie was like, what? Tell me more. Tell me more. And so Robbie has had a profound prophetic encounter, and that morning at Best Donut, Robbie looks at me and goes, Adam, if Jesus will forgive Saul, I know he will forgive me, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life being one of Jesus' best guys. Here's why I'm telling you that story. It's more than the money, y'all. Money won't buy that. Money, like, don't let the wolf trick you into missing stories with Robbie like that. Like, you want that. You want that in your life. You want that in your life. It's more than the money. Good leaders, sacrificial, proximate. And good leaders are finding their way into staying with Jesus because it's more than the money. And hey, listen, you might have to learn that one a time or two. Okay? You might have to. It's okay. Like, don't beat yourself up. Like, you might get pumped up here in a minute. We're going to pray for you, and maybe you'll, like, speak in tongues and fall on the floor, or maybe you won't. But in 6 months, if the wolf comes back and you look at your wife and go, babe, we could go to Mexico. I'm telling you, Jesus is a good shepherd, and he'll at least try to come get you before you get on the plane. And even if you go to Mexico, they need pastors there. Listen, my theology on God's mercy is like pretty wide. It's pretty wide. I mean, God just has tremendously low standards. Let's just be honest, right? This is one of my favorite things about him. Like, I am literally a hick from Kentucky. That means nothing to you. I'm telling you, in America, it's like, it's a mind blower. They're like, you? I'm like, I don't know. Like, we're just trailer park people where I'm from. That's what we are. Okay, so here's what I want to do. Why don't you stand? Why don't you stand? And if you're on the band, I don't even know who's doing what. Like, you could come do something. Jesse, atmosphere. I don't know. Jesse, volume swells.